Hey everybody, this is Heather, and you're listening to Simply Healed with Heather Leonard. Today's episode is called Kicking Cancer's Butt with Blue. For those of you who have been looking forward to this episode, I too have been looking forward to it. Had a little snafu the last time I tried to bring this to you. So I am assuming this is going to be bigger and better than the last one. So thanks for joining, and here we go. Okay, so just to give a little backstory, Lenny, or Blue, as his friends would call him, I'm going to give a little background as far as the way I understood things to have moved, but was a 62-year-old healthy sales rep in New York when he started limping and having some coughing, if I recall correctly. And he'll fill you in on all of this and give you more details. But after getting a diagnosis of stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer, having never been a smoker, he ended up actually beating the odds here. So these stories aren't told often enough. And so I feel very honored that Lenny is here today to share his story with all of us and inspire us, because he's a super interesting and inspiring guy. Now, listen, this, I have to say a little side note before I get into this episode too much. We recorded this once before. He was so gracious with his time. The episode went so smoothly. We laughed. I had tears in my eyes at times. It was informative. It was all the stuff that you want it to be. And on top of that, my dog didn't come into the room, not even once. And I was so proud to have recorded the entire episode without having to make an excuse for my slobbering dog in the background. And now here I am just 20 seconds in and my dog's already in the floor and he's already slobbering. So this is actually a really good sign, just so you know, Lenny, that on my podcast, when he comes in the room, it's because he senses good energy. So when he comes in, it's because he wants to be a part of it. So I'm just going to roll with this today. But if you don't mind, Lenny, without further ado, I just want to introduce you and have you tell us, how did you ever get the nickname Blue?
So thanks, first of all, for inviting me to your podcast. I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And I hope that this session brings a lot of inspiration, hope for anyone out there suffering with lung cancer. So I am a blues harmonica player. And when people hear I have lung cancer, they're like, what? You play harmonica and you have lung cancer? So when I was out there on stage playing clubs in Manhattan like CBGB's, my stage name was Lenny Blue. And it stuck. And here I am with the blues today.
So I love every part of your story because, like I said, it's inspirational, not the cancer part, obviously, but there's something so inspirational about somebody who's told something so massive and maintains this positivity that you have, and then also transforms that into educating and helping other people. So for me anyway, when we went through with my husband, his cancer treatments, and we're told that he was going to have something called immunotherapy, we were so excited and elated, thinking, finally, we're going to have a treatment that, unlike chemotherapy and radiation, is maybe going to offer something in the way of working with his immune system instead of making him sicker to get better. But for my husband's story, it didn't quite work that way because his cancer was on his brain and spine. Now, for you, you had a very different experience with immunotherapy, and I really want you to just share with everybody sort of how that went, if you don't mind, because you had some really cutting-edge treatments between that and CyberKnife, and your story is just one that I think will help people to realize the right questions to ask their doctor.
Sure. So if I can, I'll just give everybody a little bit brief of the history. So yes, I was 62 in November of 2019. And prior to my diagnosis in November, I started walking funny. I had a strange gait, and I thought maybe me and my wife looked at it and said, you know what, you're getting older. It's maybe arthritis. So I just kind of ignored it. And then I started to cough and wheeze. I have a mild bit of asthma, and I thought maybe it was my asthma. But my wife said, you know what, you better go get checked. So I went to the doctor, and they diagnosed me after a series of biopsies and whatnot with stage 4 non-small cell lung cancer. So the way they treated me in the beginning was, yes, I had the CyberKnife done, which is a high dose radiation to my brain. The cancer metastasized to my brain as well as my femur. And so I had that cyber knife to zap out the little bad boy in my brain. I had a walnut size tumor on my femur, the biggest bone in your body. They put a 15-inch metal rod in a 4-hour surgery so the femur wouldn't break. They took out as much of the tumor as they could. And then I had two golf ball size tumors in my left lung. I wasn't a candidate for surgery because it was in a difficult spot, they said, or bad spot in my lung, so I couldn't have surgery. Not that having any tumor in any part of your lung is good. So they treated me, yes, with chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and the immunotherapy I was given was called Keytruda. You'll see TV commercials all the time on Keytruda. It's not a drug that's been around like penicillin for many, many years. It's only been around, for what I know, for about 7 years. And not to bore anybody, but it basically teaches your body how to fight the cancer. So you have a healthy T cell in your body. Everybody has T cells that fights any kind of disease or illness. And I have a protein called PD-L1 that attaches to the cancer, to the tumor, and cloaks it. It hides the cancer from your body. What immunotherapy does, Heather, is it attacks the tumor. It teaches your body how to penetrate the PD-L1 protein. So not everybody's a candidate for immunotherapy. You have to have a high representation of the PD-L1 protein.
And the other thing that is a story I've heard too much, I guess is a good way to put it, is that people will find out the costs of having a drug like Keytruda. I think I'm not positive. I'd have to look back and see if selumetinib, which is what my husband had, is also the same thing as Keytruda. I'm not 100%. It's been a minute now, but but what I do know is it carried a $10,000 price tag for every dose for him, for every prescription. So, and he went through several bottles. So we were nervous at first, like this, the costs of this could get astronomical because we could be looking at years of being on this drug. You know, we don't know how long or, but I will say our team of doctors were phenomenal. And we ended up working directly with the company and not paying a dime for it. It is worthy of inquiring, looking around, asking your doctor, not just assuming that that's not something you can afford because either you don't have insurance or you don't think your insurance will cover it. I know you have a story on this too, don't you, Lenny?
The last thing anybody with cancer wants to do is have to deal with the financial aspect of it. How am I going to pay my bills? I'm a very fortunate person. My wife's a teacher in New Jersey, and we have a pretty decent health plan. Keytruda cost north of $11,000 per injection. And I was given that every 3 weeks for a long time. For 3.5 years, I was on Keytruda. And it was covered by my insurance company, thank God. There are some people that don't have coverage, and I don't know how they deal with it. But just an FYI for your audience, if anyone is dealing with financial aspect of any kind of cancer, we contacted Merck, the company who manufactures Keytruda. After Blue Cross Blue Shield dropped me after 2 years, they said, this is no longer recommended 2 years of Keytruda. And I was like, what? I'm showing pretty positive results with this drug. I don't want to be off of it. And Merck has a program where if you qualify, they paid for my Keytruda for a full year if you qualify. I qualified, I got my Keytruda, and life is good. I was getting my medicine and it was doing what it had to. So people should be aware of that, contact the pharmaceutical company to see if there's any kind of program to pay for your any kind of drug you're taking.
Absolutely. And I briefly touched on CyberKnife, and so did you. It is also something that is newer. It's been around a while, but it's still relatively new in the, you know, the scheme of what is done for cancer. But another thing that's worthy of asking your doctor about, not appropriate for everybody, but highly effective for those that do qualify for it. Qualify, I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, have sort of the right things. I mean, that's what you have to think about is it seems like, okay, cancer, let's just, a lot of people say throw, you know, chemo at it or throw whatever at it. It's not quite that cut and dry. And it wasn't until we were sort of in the fight for life that we realized all the details that go into making every decision as to which path to take for every individual person. And so, you know, when the brain and spine is involved, when the lung is involved, when any of these things that are so vital to our survival are involved. I mean, the difference of a millimeter just makes all the world a difference as to what you might be qualifying for. And with my husband's case, it looked like splatter paint on his spine, you know, these sort of like freckles of cancer. And that's a very different thing than, say, you know, a 2 centimeter tumor. And also, when you do the treatments, you have to consider what structures are in that area. So with the immunotherapy, what happened with us is it absolutely got right to the cancer. And like you said, it was able to allow the body to see it. So it wasn't masked anymore. So then it could, you know, actually get rid of it. But there are things to consider, like the blood-brain barrier, which can be a big obstacle when you're trying to get at a cancer that's protected by this sort of barrier within your own body. And then if you can find a way to get past that barrier, you also have the delicate structures like the brain and spine that are so vital to all of our functions. So, yeah, you might be able to get that tumor, but will it also take the use of your legs, your ability to breathe? You know, there's a lot that goes into it, and it can be a really scary time. How did you end up finding a way to just keep this positive attitude through the whole thing, when you got handed news that was so big?
So first, I just want to share with the audience, there is a difference between a lesion and a tumor. I found out that it's based upon the size. I actually was fortunate to be diagnosed with an actual lesion on my cerebellum in my brain. Of course, the cerebellum, I believe, controls your balance. It was kind of small. It was the size of a green pea. They said the lesion on my brain. So I was happy I didn't have a golf ball size in my brain. It was a lesion. And the CyberKnife, I asked the doctor, what is the success rate? And he said, 95% in your case. And I said, done. Where do I sign? It was a no-brainer. You know, 95% cure rate for getting rid of a lesion in my brain, I'll take it any day. And basically, whatever the doctors said, I might have questioned, but I pretty much went along whatever they suggested. Let's face it, they have medical training. They've been doing this a long time. I knew nothing about lung cancer. So to answer your question about being positive, a lot of things have were the reason why I stayed positive. The first thing I can recall is when I first got diagnosed, Heather, I joined a support group. There are two of them that I joined. One is called Cancer Hope Network. And the other one is called longevity, particularly for people with lung cancer, longevity. And the first Zoom meeting I attended, maybe 2 months after my diagnosis, I went around the Zoom meeting and said to everybody, "Hi, I'm Lenny Blue. I live in New Jersey, yada, yada, yada. Can everybody share with me how long have they had lung cancer?" And I heard one gentleman say, "Lenny, I've had it for 10 years. Lenny, I've had it for 20 years." And I heard a lady in New York City that has it for 23 years. Now we're talking stage four lung cancer. Once I heard that, I said, wow, okay, this is not really a death sentence or people living with this damn disease. I could do that. I never smoked. I'm pretty healthy. I trust in my body and I trust in my Lord, my God, which my faith helped me tremendously get through this. And I just from day one said, I am going to stay positive. Another thing I did is I started embracing some mantras. And my favorite one, I keep saying it, Muhammad Ali, the boxer, said, don't count the days, make the days count.
I shared with you that my dad also, who has Parkinson's disease, is a big Muhammad Ali fan, and I absolutely love that quote. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
You are downplaying, by the way, a little bit just how much of a powerhouse here you are, because a lesion in the cerebellum, let me just be clear so that our audience knows just how big this is, like a pea size, sounds tiny, but when you think about things like the pituitary gland and all these other glands in the brain, it's pretty substantial in size nonetheless. And the cerebellum is largely, like you mentioned, it's about balance, and there's vision, and there's all kinds of things that are happening in this very small area of the brain. And being able to stay positive and just instead of focusing on all of the things that could go wrong, you finding a way to just find the light. And that's what I am always preaching to my audience about mind, body, and spirit health. They're very intertwined. And as soon as you start going down that mental path of being handed a, deadly disease diagnosis, and a lot of people get that stuck in their head. Like, this isn't something people can recover from. But you instead found the people that were recovering from it. And that's where you kept your focus. And what we focus on grows. So if you believe it and you can see it, it's that belief system that I really think is why you're still here, if I'm being completely honest. I think that for my husband, one of the hardest struggles we faced was that mental aspect. We changed everything else from like what we ate, how we exercised, supplements, you name it, everything changed in his environment. But that inner environment, that inner voice, he went into a fear state, truthfully, when it's getting diagnosed over what would happen to me and my children and all the plans we had for our future, and all this stuff was just spiraling nonstop. And as his stress elevated, the disease progressed almost, in sync. Like the two were happening, not separate of one another. Yeah, so almost like the two were happening in sync. And as his mindset just was spiraling out of fear and worry, he got worse. Now at the end, like you, he largely turned to God and started to look at it as, you know what, this isn't in my hands anymore. And if I'm meant to get better, I will. He kept fighting, but he released that control over feeling like, that fight. You know what I'm saying? There is a difference between sort of a struggle and still fighting for survival. And like he was really on that struggle bus for a while of grasping at whatever he could and feeling like his life was slipping away and being in a fear state. And I think that what you did with these groups is so instrumental. And I don't know how to emphasize this enough to listeners, but having your mind right can be the big difference. So if and you offered to let me have those links, right? So that if people are interested in finding out more about those groups, I can drop that in today's podcast description.
Sure.
Because you also do some mentorship, don't you?
Yeah, so when I joined the support groups, Cancer Hope Network partnered me with a gentleman who had stage four. He lived in the same state as me, about the same age. And the gentleman was wonderful. He helped me through my journey in the beginning with all of the flood of questions you have and issues and problems and concerns. He was there for me on the phone and helped me get through some tough times. And when he passed away from his disease, I said, I'm going to pay it forward. I'm going to do what he did. I want to be a mentor. So I signed up at Cancer Hope Network to be a mentor, where I've mentored in the past about 35 people throughout the United States, and even in Australia, I have a person. So if you're diagnosed with lung cancer, they match you up with someone like me, and I'm there for you. Family is great, friends are great, but not unless you've walked in my shoes do you really understand what it means to have this diagnosis. And that's why I do my mentoring program, to help other people that are going down this path like I have been.
Love that so much. It's that pay it forward bit that just keeps this world going. I love it. That's amazing. This is a perfect place for a quick break. So much more to cover with Lenny when we get back, so don't go anywhere so you won't miss it. With all the talk this episode about the importance of mindset and keeping your mind straight when you have major, major things that you're coping with mentally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I have a program. I have several programs, actually, sessions available that are hypnosis that work on just that, reprogramming the subconscious mind, making sure that we keep our mindset aligned with our goals in life. And so whatever it is that you are dealing with, whatever struggles that you feel like you're having, whatever inner voice that wants to keep rearing its ugly head and, you know, telling you messages that might not be serving you and might not be helping you to stay in an optimistic mindset, all of that can be worked with through the use of hypnosis sessions. So if you are interested, I will also drop those links in today's podcast description so you can get your hands on them and find out more about what can be done to help you in the way of making sure that your mindset supports your goals. All right, guys, right back to the show. I do want to round back again to the symptoms and all of that stuff, because for a lot of people, I mean, this is the main thing, right? We're always talking about getting the screening and getting everything checked to make sure that you're healthy. Sometimes cancer has a very sneaky way of working its way into our lives unseen, and then we go on for years having it in our bodies. And that's the best time to really be fighting with it. You know, that's the best time to sort of get the upper hand, and we're not even aware it's there. Sometimes, you know, it's a little headache that somebody brushes off, or a limp, or whatever it is. And for you, because of it having metastasized, even though we're talking about lung cancer, this might be confusing to some people how we jumped right into limping and how does that connect? But it's because metastasizing really means that now, instead of just being localized to his lungs, it has spread to other areas. So it could show up as a limp. It could show up as a headache. The symptoms are sort of everything and anything. Especially if it's at the point of metastasizing, which is when it's really crucial to get treatment fast. And for you being a non-smoker, how did you just get to the point of saying, like, I got to get into the doctor and get this seen? And how long did you sort of put off the symptoms before you got there?
That's a great question. I would say I let it go as far as my gait changing and that little pain I had in my leg. Probably about 3 months. And then towards the end of the 3 months, I started wheezing and coughing a little bit too much. I'm very lucky to have a partner. My wife of 34 years said, you better get to the doctor. And unlike a lot of men, we don't listen. And this time I listened to her. And boy, I don't know what would have happened if I didn't go to the doctor. I mean, I kind of feel that I had this lung cancer growing for at least 2 years. And Heather, like you said, it is correct. Cancer can be dormant in your body, you're just sitting there and growing and you don't know about it, you know? And it's a difficult call. Like, are you supposed to run to the doctor every time you have an ache or a pain? And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, maybe in retrospect, I should have gotten an x-ray of my femur since I was limping and I had that little bit of a pain. It's a hard call. And that's why I ended up having stage four, because it went on for so long in my body. Non-small cell lung cancer is less aggressive than small cell. Most lung cancers are non-small cell. But still, it was aggressive enough to metastasize to two places in my body.
Wow. For my husband, yeah, he put it off for months and months. It was my brother who finally said, you're over 40. This isn't a joke anymore. Like, when things like this happen, you got to get a little looked at. And I mean, when you look at those suggested screens and things for men, a lot of the times it's prostate cancer, and women, there are pap smears and mammograms, but there are other cancers that actually do have screening tools that aren't as well known, and they're important. And if you actually ask your doctor or look into it with your insurance company, a lot of the times there are ones that are covered that you might not even know about that could save your life. So just doing those regular screenings instead of brushing it off and saying, well, I don't have a family history, it's not that important to me, they actually are quite important. And the research is why they have them every so many years or at a certain age. They've already looked into that. They've seen the statistics to know hey, if you get this tested every 3 years and you're a man of the age of such and such, then your odds are much better at catching it early. Is there anything around the way of lung screening that you know of?
Heather, one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this podcast with you this morning is because I want to spread the word about lung cancer screening. And thanks for bringing that up. Women get screened for breast cancer and mammographies at least once a year. At least I think that's the standard. I think over 40 is supposed to get a mammography once a year. And I think 96% of women get mammographies. That's great, a great number. Lung cancer screening, and only 6% of people get screened for lung cancer. 6%. So there's a new criteria now for lung cancer screening, and I'll share that with your audience if I can.
Please.
If you are at the age of 50 or to 80 years of age, and if you've smoked 80 packs of cigarettes in your lifetime, you're a candidate for lung cancer screening. So what does that mean? Well, if you, any family member, friends, anyone you know has that smoking history, please have them have a conversation with their doctor. It's very simple. All you got to do is go to the doctor, start that conversation, and if they determine you're a candidate for lung cancer screening, it's now a CT, low dose CT scan. It's no longer an X-ray. So you go to your doctor, they'll give you a low dose CT scan, which is covered usually by your insurance company and Medicare, Medicaid. Catch it early. That's the name of the game. And so like I said, I want to spread the word about lung cancer screening. By the way, lung cancer is the most underfunded of all the cancers. There are going to be 238,000 people this year diagnosed with lung cancer, almost equally divided amongst men and women. So this disease, if you have lungs, you can get lung cancer. So please take it seriously. Think about it. Are you a candidate? Do you have friends and family? Have this conversation.
I'm shocked by that just because if you think about it, I mean, men do get breast cancer as well. So I won't say, I mean, it's limited to women because it's definitely not. But for the most part, things like prostate cancer and ovarian cancer, this is just one gender it can attack. And so it's amazing to me that something like lung cancer, which you just touched on perfectly, said is that we all have lungs, and the vitalness of this organ. It astounds me that there's not more in the way of lung cancer. The only thing I can put my finger on for that is, well, lack of education, but something that I deal with a lot in the diabetes network and stuff is that people tend, I don't want to say people, I want to say that the industry, I guess, tends to not put as much money and funding towards things that they think are brought on by people's habits, which always irritates me because. Listen, type 1 diabetics, I'm just going to throw this little side note in, have no control. This is an autoimmune disorder. What they eat, what their exercises are, zero to do with their disease. Type 2 is a different disease. Type 1 is different and has nothing to do with choices. Now, similarly, look at lung cancer. A lot of people automatically assume, well, they must have been a smoker. And that's just not the case. And that lack of education around it, I think, drips into the industry where the funding, and when you look at who is doing the work to get grants and all this, I feel like there's just less effort put in when they think it's a self-brought on cancer. I hate to even say that. I normally would never, but it just bugs me a little bit because I've never heard it put that way before, that it is it's almost just neglected. It's a neglected area of cancer that needs more attention.
Yeah. You know what? You hit the nail right on the head. Unfortunately, there is still a stigma that lung cancer is only for smokers. And maybe that's why it's not funded. I don't know. And till this day, the first thing when you tell somebody you have lung cancer, the first question is, did you smoke? Or are you a smoker? And The statistics are there. It is true. Smoking is terrible. You will get lung cancer if you smoke. There's a very good high possibility of some kind of respiratory illness. Out of everyone that has lung cancer, 80% are smokers. 80%. 20% are non-smokers like me. So, people ask me, how did you get lung cancer? Guess what? Nobody will ever know. The doctors don't know. I don't know. Is it environmental? Is it the Big Mac I'm eating? Not. Is it the food? You don't know. But you got to deal with the reality. And I'm big into statistics. I try to understand the data behind lung cancer, the data behind Keytruda, the success rate. I'll share with everyone there on the podcast land. I'm in remission, and I've been in remission for 2 years plus. So what does that mean? Well, guess what? The scans show no tumors in my body, and I'll shout it from the rooftop. I'm in remission. But guess what? The statistics are grim. There's a very high probability. I think the number is around 86%. Not if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to occur again. How do you live with that? How do you live knowing that this cancer more than likely is going to come back? And lung cancer likes to go to two places. It loves to go to the brain and it loves to go to bones. And this whole podcast that you have, healing and positive thinking, I could sit in the corner and cry and sulk and be miserable, but how do I stay positive? Well, I wake up in the morning. First thing I do is thanks God for another day. And I say, Lenny, how do you feel? You know what? I feel pretty good today. Well, guess what? I'm going to wake up. I'm going to go out and do gardening. I do my vegetable gardening. I tend to my landscaping. I play my music, my guitar and harmonica. I do my mentoring. I focus on the day. There are going to be good days and bad days, but the days that are good, I'm going to take advantage of it and live life to the fullest. I'm sad to say that lung cancer made me appreciate life, my family, more than ever before. And it's sad that it took a damn disease to make me feel that way. But believe you me, I'm going right now through life, happy go lucky. I'm enjoying every day that I'm healthy, and I'm doing my best to give back and help people out there that are suffering from this disease.
I love that you said that so much because it truly is about staying present and not getting too far ahead of yourself, because when your mind is worried about tomorrow, you're in a fear state, and it's really hard to heal when your body is releasing hormones like cortisol and reaction to that fear. And so if you want your body to stay in a place where it's primed to fight and it can be doing the work behind the scenes, and you can be enjoying your life while your body's doing the work to fix itself, our body's brilliant. It is amazing at healing itself. And every single day we're making new healthy cells. We don't want to make new unhealthy cancerous cells. So every day your body's working to replace sickness with health. And it's what we're feeding it through our mindset, through our emotions, and all of this as to whether that new blueprint is going to be a healthy one or not. And that's what I really wanted my company to just sort of bring to light. It's not spoken of enough, but that's the element of control we do have over it. Because I'll tell you, like when we got that cancer diagnosis, we felt like our control was stripped from our hands. But the one thing that we always could control was what we were doing to feed that inner environment of positivity and just, the faith, releasing it to God, knowing that if you're doing all of the things the doctors are suggesting and you're making the changes in your own, like you said, it could be environment. I mean, with lungs for certain, we are, whatever we breathe in, you know, whatever we're exposing ourselves to, that will pass through that tissue. So, you know, being really careful about what you're exposing your body to. Some people are painters and they're inhaling really toxic chemicals. Other people like you, I mean, you've played in places where I'm sure there was smoky environments. So secondhand smoke can have its effect. You know, there's asbestos, there's all these things that there's all kinds of possibilities. And like you said, the doctors could just spend forever trying to figure it out and never come to a conclusion, because it could have been even just that inner environment. It could have been a high stress, because I know if I remember correctly, when your previous job was doing something that was a little more on the stressful end, wasn't it?
I was a sales rep in New York City.
Yeah, that's no joke.
And sales is pretty stressful. You know, you have quotas.
Oh, yeah.
It was stressful for sure. But everyone has stress in their life to some degree.
But look what you did with it. You took your, as soon as you got that diagnosis, right? Wasn't that around the same time that you retired and started doing more of the hobbies and the things you enjoy?
Yeah. When I got diagnosed, I said, you know what? I cannot deal with my customers' demands and all the pressure of selling and relationships with customers. And I was fortunate enough, not everybody's fortunate enough. I was fortunate enough to say, I'm hanging up my art supply sales case. I was an art supply sales rep selling graphic art materials to people in New York City that had design departments. So I stopped working and I wanted to focus on my health and me. And along with that came the love of my hobbies that I do, you know, the gardening and my music that is so important to me. So, yeah.
I know you sort of mentioned this earlier, but you didn't bring up Ned specifically, but Ned is a shortened version for, in the cancer world, no evidence of disease. And I shared this with you once before, Lenny, but I told my husband, I'll never cheat on you with another man, but if I ever see Ned, then look out, because I'm not going to be able to control myself.
Oh, boy.
We waited for that. That was like every time, like, is there, it, like, we wanted to hear Ned. So anybody that is a listener that is fighting the cancer fight, or knows somebody who is, I know that you've heard the term, and I know you, it's like ringing the cancer bell, and, you know, but tenfold to hear that no evidence of disease. It's just what everybody holds out for. I'm just so grateful to be talking to somebody who was able to get that. And so what now for you? Like, what do they do in terms of monitoring and watching out? Is there any way, or do you just wait until a symptom pops up and then that's when you bring yourself in, or how are you being watched over here?
Sure. So I've been off of my cancer treatment, Keytruda, since April of last year. So a full year I've been off of Keytruda.
Nice.
So I'm on no medication for my cancer. There's, you know, and I get scanned every 3 months. So I get a full scan of my body, my chest, my abdomen, my pelvis, where the lung cancer was. Every 3 months, I do a CT scan and blood work, of course. And then every 6 months, I go for a brain scan, MRI of my brain. And so, you know, my next scan is next month in May. I'll have a scan and hopefully get some good news that there's no bad boys growing anywhere in my body. And I continue to enjoy life to its fullest.
Love that so much. I don't even know how to thank you for doing this, not once, but twice. So the backstory on this, guys, we recorded this and it came out just so beautifully the first go round. And I come back to this a lot, because when we're talking mindset, I cried that day, like tears to my eyes. It was the best recording ever. There was not a stumble. There was not, this one is like not even half as good as the first one, which is frustrating. But there's something that keeps popping up in my mind, which is, I have so much faith in God. When things fall apart, I used to think, okay, so I would be typing up a book report. And then, I don't know, back in the day when you actually had to have a desktop plug. I mean, now the laptops, this doesn't really happen. They auto-save. You used to have to hit save all the time as you're going along, right? So you don't lose anything.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. And I remember losing power or somebody tripping over the cord or something. And this book report you spent weeks on just gets lost. That was the feeling I was getting when we lost our episode. But there was a voice in the back of my head saying, These things aren't happening to you, they're happening for you. Remember that. Because you could look at that two different ways. I could have spent my time just miserable about it. And, you know, the whole time we're recording today, thinking of all the things we didn't cover that we did last time, or all the jokes, or all the ways that it just flowed so nicely. But if we're being honest, someone had to hear this message today. Somebody that maybe wasn't a podcast listener a couple weeks ago. And then I haven't shared this with you yet, Lenny, but I just had more than a 3,000% increase in podcast listeners between this first recording and now. So it was me. I had been sort of not advertising my podcast. And then last week I decided to drop a note into a group that I have and said, hey guys, if everyone just gave one listen, it would help my podcast significantly. And more than a 3,000% increase, just like that. So these are people who have lost loved ones. So a lot of them, you know, they've been through this and stuff, but I know in my heart, this had to be heard by somebody. And if we had released it a couple weeks ago, they probably never would have heard it. So the fact that you were so willing to do this again with me, and you know, my dog's snoring the whole time and we just stumbled through it. And it's awkward when we've already had the jokes. We've already covered these topics once, to try to just keep that out of our brains and just have it flow. But all I can say is thank you. And I know it was meant to be, and I'm not going to stay in that lack mindset of, oh, look what happened to us. I know it happened for somebody else, for someone else's story to be affected by you and yours. So thank you. You're so inspiring. And just having you here has been a gift twice.
Thank you for saying that. Do we have another 5 minutes?
Of course. Yes.
So, you know, this whole podcast about positive healing, one of the things I do is I laugh and I smile, and I'm thinking about doing a comedy stand-up routine. It's going to be called The Funny Side of Cancer.
Nice.
I should actually say The Funny Side of My Cancer, because not everybody laughs at cancer, but I can. So I'm going to share with your audience a couple of little stories. So when I got diagnosed and I had my femur surgery, I went into a private room after the surgery. And as we know, in a hospital, they come and check you every couple of hours for vitals. So I think it was 6:30 a.m. in the morning, and a nurse comes in and wakes me up, and I'm shivering, and I wake up and I say to her, did I wake up in the morgue? It's freezing in here. And she says, oh, you wicked little man, it's the thermostat is turned on so low. And that to me was something I laughed about. I made a joke in the beginning about my cancer. Another thing that happened is, and your audience should know this, you know, if you meet somebody, unfortunately, with cancer, there are things you shouldn't say. So I'm walking around my neighborhood, the block, after my femur surgery, and somebody, I want to say a neighbor, lives a couple of blocks away from me, I know him. He comes up to me and he goes, oh, what's going on with you? I see you walking around with crutches last week. I said, well, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. And he goes, how long did I give you? Wait a second. How long did they give you? And he said, well, I said, well, you know, I'm being treated now. And he said, well, I just had a heart surgery. They gave me 15 years. He's comparing his illness with mine. How long did they give you? I'll never get over that one. You know, I'm forgiving. Sometimes people don't know what to say. another neighbor came up to me. These senior citizens that I love came up to me, and I shared with them I have lung cancer. And the gentleman who actually is a therapist, he's like 83 years old, says, well, you've had a good life.
Oh, my gosh. Jeez.
Laugh. I have to laugh.
Gosh.
I'm 62 years old. Well, you've had a good life. And then his wife hugs me and says, I don't want to lose you.
Oh, my gosh.
like a diamond ring. I don't want. It's like, I don't know.
Oh, no.
I have to find the humor somehow in this disease to get by. And maybe my humor, my laughing, my stand-up comedy will get me through another day, another week, another month, another year. So I
No
wanted to share
doubt.
that with you.
Oh my gosh. So first, can I just say nobody's life has an expiration date? This is an important thing to take note of because when somebody starts giving you an expiration date and saying, you have X amount of time to live, that is based on statistics and statistics alone, because that's all we have as doctors. Like, I will speak to this, like, from the medical point of view. We're doing the best we can when we're giving a diagnosis and a prognosis, and we're working with numbers, and we're working with past experience, and even what's in textbooks is based upon what's happened already in the past. We're in a new day and time. Our bodies, our mental strategies, all of these things are evolving. And who's to say you aren't going to be the first one to, surpass the expectation for your life? Don't let an expiration date that a human being is putting on you be the end all be all. That's not to say don't listen to your doctor, but it's also to stay grounded in not immediately hearing something and already like picking out a casket. Your story's crazy and it does make me chuckle, but it's also a sad thing that's happening because people just automatically hear cancer and think, oh boy, like, well, how much longer are you going to be here? It's crazy. It is crazy.
But like I said, I give people a free pass. It's a difficult situation to talk about, and I think people genuinely are good people. I trust people.
I
So
agree.
in closing, if I could, I want to share with your audience what somebody with stage four lung cancer can do, okay?
Okay.
There you have it, Lenny Blue.
Oh my gosh, I love it. You are such an absolute gift. I'm so grateful and you're so gracious. And he was so gracious, guys, to offer his personal email as well, and information and links to the support groups and mentoring and all of that stuff. I'm going to drop it all in today's podcast description. I want to say one more thing too. I'm thinking back, Lenny, like there's a woman who literally did kick her cancer with laughter. And her story, I'm trying to think, there's a guy out there, he does Chris Beat Cancer. If any of you have ever heard it, look it up because he actually does a really great job, I think, of we followed a lot of his stuff in terms of turning our lives around and how to change things from like and the environment and the supplements. And he goes through all of it really beautifully. I feel like it was through him that I learned of her, but it could very well have been some other way. Who knows? I was on a million different email subscriptions and stuff at that point. But at any rate, this woman, I can't remember whether it's like 1-800-LAUGHS. Please don't put that in your phone and then have whoever has that number. No, it was like one of those type of things where you could dial a phone number, toll free, and any time of day get somebody who just had recorded jokes. So when we literally couldn't find our way out of that storm cloud and we felt like, it was following us everywhere on some days, we would just dial in and listen to a couple jokes just to get out of our own funk. Because it's important, you got to have strategies like that. Inside my grief group, I give people strategies like that with my private coaching, to keep what I refer to as the back pocket memory, which, just I'm gonna give a little like freebie here to my listeners, but basically, what that is, it's a strategy that if you're just having a day where you can't get out of it, it just feels like no matter what, I just keep dropping down into these lower energy vibration. It feels like nothing good's gonna come from this day. I can't get out of my own way. There's got to be some memory that you have. And with the grief community, I say, with your past loved one, but with cancer, just any memory you've ever had in your life that is one of those, when you're sitting in church, totally inappropriate to be cracking up, but the more you try to fight it back, the more you want to just burst out. That's a back pocket memory. And keep it with you because there's going to be times where you're like, I can't stop thinking about the worst case scenario and bad things just keep happening. Bring that memory up, and it's an instant energy shift. You can't not, like, the memory I'm talking about, because, like, just thinking about it right now probably brought a smirk to your own face. So that's the one. Whatever it is, like, if you've got that memory that it instantaneously, oh my gosh, yeah, I remember the time Uncle Bob did whatever, and oh my God, and then all of a sudden you're there again, you can feel the emotions inside you. That's when you know it's a memory that can bring you up and out, you know? So that's my two cents on that. But oh my gosh, Letty, thank you again so much for doing this, not once, but twice.
Yes,
And we'll have to do it again after you get Ned
ma'am.
again in another 10 years, and then maybe another 10 years after that, and another. We're just going to keep this rolling, right?
Amen. And
Right.
I want to thank you personally for what you do for the community, for people in general. And you've taken something so sad, so horrible in your life, and turned it into something so beautiful and wonderful. And I know, Heather, that Barry is smiling down on all of us, including you and your two children. It's a wonderful thing you're doing. And I'm thankful for Mike, your friend, for introducing me to you. And like you said, I'll share my email. You can share my email with people. If you're going through lung cancer or any kind of cancer and just want to speak to somebody who understands, I have a lot of tips and tricks on side effects, on the financial aspect of cancer, how to deal with it through going through the pharmaceutical companies to pay for your treatment. Whatever it is, I'm here and I'm willing to speak to anybody if you need someone to listen to.
Oh my gosh, thank you again. And like you said, thank you to our mutual friend Mike for introducing us and making this happen. And everybody, Lenny Blue, I can't be happier to know you and to keep sharing your inspiring story. So for many years to come, we're going to keep rounding back and showing people what can happen. So stop believing that, you're going to be one of the many that, has this terrible outcome, and believe that there are many out there with beautiful outcomes. And, you could be sharing your story on this podcast next. So keep your head in the right headspace. And so much love to the podcast community for following me, and, keep coming back. And so you can hear Lenny's, updates and all about Ned. All right, Lenny, thank you again.
You're
Bye-bye.
welcome. Be kind to each other. Take care.
Absolutely.